Drive Time on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Zurich. We believe small actions can have great impact. Take a small action today. Speak to a financial broker about a Zurich pension.
Now, public health doctors have given the government 2 months to award them consultant status, or they say they will ballot for strike action. At the moment, public health specialists earn around €113,000. Consultants who only treat public patients have a pay scale that ranges from €141,000 to €195,000. Now, Dr. Aina Kelly is chairperson of the Public Health Committee in the IMO. She joins me on the line. Good evening, Aina.
Good evening, Damien.
The government has agreed to award public health specialist this consultant contract, but they say, though, the timetable has just been obviously pushed back because of the pandemic. Do you accept that?
Well, I suppose we've been waiting for this for so many years in certain respects, but particularly in the last year and a half, we were expecting to be awarded our consultant contracts in July of this year. And obviously with the pandemic, we recognise the fact that that has, you know, changed some things. However, it's also brought to the fore the importance of doing this as urgently as possible. So it is one of the most urgent things that the government can do, because it'll help stabilise the public health medical service in this country, which is one of the most critical services to protect the public against COVID-19.
But is this... Go on, Aina.
Well, I suppose really one of the risks, you see, of not doing this quickly is that we have members that are so very angry and so frustrated at the delays that I suppose they wonder, will it ever happen? If you can't get a consultant contract during a pandemic, when it is, you know, when it's so obvious why we need to have a consultant contract, and this was all agreed long before the pandemic, then it seems hard to understand why it's not being done, and also will it ever get done? So I suppose people need to see a timeline in which they can see that this is actually going to happen, rather than being promised into the future. Mm. You know, it's been, I suppose, long fingered for a long, long time. And now I suppose people are getting very desperate, because they're tired, exhausted, and we need to be able to retain staff. And we have specialist registrars who are training in this branch of medicine. Will they stay in it if they, feel that this is not going to be a properly developed, consultant-led public health medical service into the future?
Is this, and I can put it straight to you, Dr. Kelly, is this down to money? And are you looking at the state of the finances at the moment, the fact that we're heading for a recession? And is the worry that, you know, we're just not going to get these contracts and we're going to lose out on that promotion?
Okay, well, doctors have very good salaries, and that's very, that's just the way it is throughout the world. Mm. And I suppose it's not just about the money. I suppose the amount of money that's needed for public health medicine is relatively small in comparison to the scheme of things. It is a critically required service, but it's also a very small service. So that the budgetary requirements to fix this are minuscule in comparison to the costs of COVID-19 in this country. So it's not a budgetary argument per se. It is something that I suppose there might be concerns in the future, but it is actually a relatively small amount of money. So that shouldn't be a problem, regardless of the finances of the country, because no matter how bad the finances of the country are, public health medicine needs to be treated equally with other branches of medicine, or it won't be there to provide the protection that the country needs. And so it's a sort of a circular argument in certain ways, but it's actually essential that this is dealt with as soon as possible.
Yeah. No, just maybe a follow on to that would be that, you know, obviously public health doctors are on the front line. They're in the forefront of everybody's minds at the moment, the wonderful work that has been done to try and help us battle the pandemic. But do you fear that you might risk some of that goodwill by threatening strike action in the middle of a pandemic when you're needed most?
Well, I suppose our members are very ethical doctors, and that's why they aren't actually, they're trying to hold themselves back from thinking about that at the moment. We shouldn't have to be thinking about this at the moment. This is something that's been going on for a long time. We're not the only people in Ireland who make these decisions. You know, it is essential that all the other parties who are party to the lack of consultant contract in Ireland start working to help us to sort this problem out. it isn't something that we should ever want to be thinking about or even thinking or planning to do or balloting for this. But obviously, I suppose people are starting to feel that this is not going to, we're never going to get this sorted out without balloting for industrial action. So it's come to, I suppose, it's coming to a head or crunch time for our members, really, that they are concerned that, you know, and they're concerned not just about, this is not really about you know, their own terms and conditions only. It's about the providing a rational consultant-led public health medical service to the future. We have analysed this some years ago, that there's no way we can provide a proper public health medical service in Ireland without it being a consultant-led service. So this is just, it's in everybody's interest. It's in the public interest, you know, and it's essential that this is sorted out as soon as possible.
And I've heard reports that Irish public health doctors are being poached by the NHS in Britain. Is that something you've heard of?
Well, I know that some of our colleagues, especially people who've worked there before, definitely have contacts there who are, you know, regularly contacting them to see are they coming, are they coming back. I know I used to work in Australia, and I've got some emails as well. There are. This is something that we're working in a globalised world, and a lot of our colleagues have trained in other parts of the world and have contacts there who would actually be, you know, contact them about jobs. Then there are. We can all apply for jobs as well, and then our younger colleagues as well, who, you know, haven't necessarily made the decisions about where they want to live and so on, are much more, you know, very mobile, I suppose, to actually be able to take up opportunities in other countries. Ireland is an outlier in regard to a consultant status for public health medicine, and you know, similarly sized countries and comparable countries like New Zealand and Scotland, they have consultant contracts for public health medicine. And not only that, though, they also have twice the numbers of consultants for public health medicine than we have, you know, for our under or improperly employed specialists who can, you know, who are eligible to become consultants in public health medicine in other countries but can't get a consultant contract in this country. So it's, you know, this is an urgent matter for everybody, because the work we do is for the public and it's for the economy too, because this helps to fine-tune the responses that are required in COVID-19. And the more we have of a proper functioning consultant-led public health medical service, the more we will be able to assist this country to manage COVID-19 in the most efficient and effective manner.
Yeah. Now, you said that you've decided to hold off a ballot for strike action for 2 months for ethical reasons. Will things be any different in 2 months' time? And what do you mean by ethical reasons?
Well, I suppose our ethics are always that we're always going to put our patients first. And therefore, we'll always find it extremely difficult to consider this. But I suppose in the long run as well, our members are all people who have got to try and go into work every day feeling that they're getting a continuous slap in the face, really, because every day without equality is a very hard day to work. And this is these are the most challenging times that public health medicine and most doctors in Ireland have ever had to go through. This is, I mean, I think everybody knows this, for everybody as well, not just medicine. And in a way, when you're people tell you you're being valued, but in reality, but not enough to employ you properly to do your work properly. And so it's a sort of a double standard in a way. And it is, I suppose, for personally, every individual person is going to have to, you know, accept or not accept the situation as it is. So it isn't, would never be an easy decision, but it's, we shouldn't even have to be thinking about this.
Just before I let you go, I want to, you talked there about challenging times for people in the medical profession. That is granted, of course, really, really tough times for everybody involved on the front line and for GPs and so on. But also, as you know, there are publicans and restaurant owners in Dublin City tonight now who are going to feel very, very challenged as a result of the changes that are about to come. Just want to go back to Professor Philip Nolan, who's been tweeting today, and Barry mentioned it earlier on, and I just want to quote him and get your opinion. He said, "It is reasonable to ask why close restaurants and pubs if there's so few outbreaks associated with these environments. However, this is misreading and misrepresenting the data on outbreaks and clusters." So can you give us your perspective as, you know, as a public health doctor? Yeah. Do you have sympathy with him? Do you have sympathy then with people who say, you know, why are restaurants and pubs being targeted?
Well, I suppose what we're finding, I mean, I suppose the reason the data is about this word called community transmission, which really means is that you don't understand the links between cases. You know, this is a global pandemic, which means, of course, that it is a big one big outbreak in which it's broken down into smaller, understandable outbreaks where every case is linked to another case. So when you don't know those links, then you cannot really you can't really be sure when you're interpreting the data what actually is included in community transmission. Now, if you have outbreaks that you already know about, you find your cases that are associated with those, and it's the ones that you cannot find the links are, they are the ones that are called community transmission. And I suppose the data around small places like small bars, small restaurants and so on, you know, and lots of other settings, yeah, you might not be able to pick that up for a while. And that's what I think he's talking about there, is the fact that you cannot say just because we don't have the data, what called absence of data, or absence of evidence is not evidence, yeah, of absence. And that's because we have a lot of unknown areas. And I think he also makes that point, is it's the actual shortage of public health resources that is actually the problem, because you can't do enough source investigation to really understand what's going on in these outbreaks. Yeah. And that's, you know, that brings us back to why it's so important that we have a consultant contract to provide a consultant-led public health medical service that can maximise the ability of, you know, in Ireland to understand our source, the source investigation, to investigate, sure, back and the outbreaks, so that you can really ensure that you're breaking every chain of transmission. And then we'll be able to focus on putting in the controls in a much more focused manner, rather than having to do some, right, of these broader controls. You know?
Yeah. Finally, Dr. Ina Kelly, I suppose hindsight is 2020 vision, but from your perspective and people that you've been talking to, let's go back to the summer when we were moving a little more quickly through the phases and we were down to single figures and cases every day. Now we're wondering why we've had this sudden upsurge again in numbers. Did we move through the phases too early? What do you put your finger on as being the cause of where we are now?
Well, I suppose nothing has changed with the virus. The virus is still as transmissible as it was. The number of people, I mean, we were very successful, relatively speaking, despite all the sadness and tragedy. I mean, unfortunately, there was an awful lot of sadness and tragedy, and yet we had only about less than 2% of the population we feel were infected in the wave one. So when the country was opened up again, nearly everybody in the country is still susceptible to this virus. Mm. So what we have to maintain are all the same habits that we've had throughout the early parts, you know, and that's why people have to keep saying the same things again. We need to keep our distancing, reduce our numbers of contacts, and, you know, we need to protect our schools, protect our healthcare. And that means that really, you know, increasing our number of contacts, while you want to open up the economy, you have to do it in a very, very managed, mm-hmm, and controlled way. And that requires every one of us to, I suppose, to move through the country, you know, move through our places in a very controlled way, so that we are minimizing our physical maximizing, okay, our physical distancing, minimizing our spread.
Yes.
And we should all try to avoid getting COVID-19. And if we can't avoid it, we need to try and prevent spread. And it is just something that everybody needs to do. So the phases really are just about, trying to, I suppose, open up in a rational way. But it is individual behavior, and all our individual behaviors that will, I suppose, result in the success or the challenges, yeah, of each of those phases.
All right. OK, we're going to leave it there. Dr. Ina Kelly is chairperson of the Public Health Committee of the IMO. And thank you very much indeed for joining us on Drive Time.